Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. Sadly, this will be the last video to be sponsored by Squarespace for the immediately foreseeable future, as my contract with them has come to an end. So I thought I'd just give you a highlight of some of the things I've been able to do with my website thanks to Squarespace so far. So we've got photo albums being hosted. These have obviously been kindly donated by the descendants of the people who took these photos. So these are unpublished photos, freely available and easily accessible via the website, plus of course my own photo collection as I slowly digitize it and upload it. There's various museums that I've visited. So far I've only put up Scandinavia in the UK. I'll put up the rest later. There's embedded maps, there's forms, there's book reviews with the links to those. There's web articles, I've reused the blog feature for that. There's a channel summary with some embedded videos. There's schedules for meeting Drac, maps as well in that actually. I should probably update that at some point. Online web store, very nice and easily configurable. Recommended channels if you want to go and see other historical based channels, and recommended websites. So all of this has been really easy to put together with Squarespace. Thank you very much to them for sponsoring the channel. And well, I'm going to continue using their products. So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenefell. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show. All right, so welcome to Chalk Valley again, everyone. So we've seen a coastal motorboat, we've seen some cannon, and I found a few other things which I'll be filming later on elsewhere, but one of the questions that keeps popping up, you keep asking me about clinker built versus carvel built, and well, this is a clinker built vessel, so I can actually show you rather than just having to describe to you. So as you can see, this is a small boat. You could use it as a rowboat, small fishing boat, etc. But unlike a more, well, nowadays traditionally built carvel built ship, whereas obviously back in the day this is the traditional way, you can see there isn't really all that much inside. So this bit up here at the stem at the bow, and this knee back at the stern and the transom board, those are pretty much the largest single solid bits of wood in this boat. The planks are obviously longer, but they're considerably thinner, and the strakes here that are holding it all together are extremely thin. As you can tell, you would, you know, these are not structural pieces so much as they're just there to hold everything together, and the actual strength is coming from the planks. And if any of you have used modern boats, whether they be fiberglass or wood construction, you know, this thing, which is probably 10, 12 foot long, you wouldn't be able to easily move that one manned because of all the thick timbers or other structural elements that would be making up the support for it. Whereas this thing, being carvel built, you're just relying on the strength of those timbers, and I can take it with literally just one hand here, and I can easily move it. That's how. So this is one of the major advantages of carvel built ships. They're very light, they ride very lightly, the entire strength is in the hull. That is, however, when you're talking about combat, their weakness, because if you take damage in a carvel built ship to the planking, well, okay, you've got a hole, you plug it, you stop the water coming in, that's about all you have to worry about. Whereas in a clinker built ship, because the planks are the main strength of the boat, if you take damage to the planking, you're also taking structural damage, and too much of that damage and the whole thing will collapse on you, which the Ottomans learned to their cost at Lepanto when Venetian cannonballs started smashing holes in their lovely clinker-built galleys. But you might notice that this is partly complete and elsewhere is not. So we have these copper nails sticking through, and these are attached to the boat, obviously first by hammering them through, but then, as you can see here with these incomplete ones, they're finished off by a process called roving. So we have one of the volunteers who's going to give me a hand here to show you how to do this, because it's something you need two people to do. So we've got the equipment. Yeah. So I'm just going to maneuver this into place so we can...
Hold on. The tools are very sensibly being put away.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, I know that bit. Thank you. Right, so what we have here is we have our copper nails. So we take this little cap piece, which looks a little bit like a thumbtack, except with the spiky bit taken out and a hole in, put in place. And you place that over the nail, and as you see, it's too tight for it, it won't go down there. So you take this tool, which has a hole in it, you place that over, you take a hammer, and the reason you need two people is because the wonderful assistant is on the other side holding a big lump of iron to the other side so we don't just knock the nail back out the boat. And there we go. So you can see now we've knocked that down so it's flush against. It's holding the nail in and it's providing a watertight seal for the nail's path. We then take our little nippers and we leave an eighth to a sixteenth of an inch of copper. Just nip that off. Bit more?
Tiny bit more.
There we go. And then we take the peening end of the hammer and we hammer this down in a slightly circular motion to peen it in place. And the reason for that is twofold. One, by peening it all the way around, it means there's no way for this little cap to ping off at any point if it's under stress. But also, copper work hardens. So the more you hit it, the stiffer and more brittle it becomes. So if you just keep hitting the same spot, eventually it'll become so brittle, you'll just ping that chunk off and then you have to start all over again. So that's a very simple process for attaching copper rivets essentially to a clinker built vessel. And for those of you who've worked with hot riveting for steel and iron ships, it's essentially exactly the same process within reason. It's just you don't need to heat it all up in a furnace. So this is also part of Portsmouth Historic Quarters Boathouse 4. So if you want to see this, rope making, high speed launches, motor gunboats, and all sorts of other fun small craft, come down to Portsmouth Dockyard. And they're all there, and if you're lucky, you might even find that some of them are actually sailing around at high speed and you can get on board. So come on down, trust me, it's very fun. I've done it myself.
So I hope you enjoyed that little excerpt from Chalk Valley, but I thought I'd throw in a few little extra details for those of you who are curious in the editing process. So obviously everything I said about clinker building during that video is accurate, but for examples of clinker building, the most famous examples that you're probably familiar with will be things like Viking longships, which were clinker built, and then following on medieval cogs, the standard trade vessels and some of the first dedicated warships to be seen in Western European waters after the demise of the Roman Empire. As I mentioned in the recording at Chalk, the single largest advantage of clinker building was the lightweight nature of the hull. Because you were relying purely on the planking could be pretty thin, the overlaps gave it strength, and then you just had some, apart from the keel, just essentially some shape-forming sections of wood that in and of themselves weren't structural, they were just more of a framework to guide how everything was put together. And that's why, for example, Viking longships could be extremely shallow draft, because they're extremely light, and also being lightweight meant you could pick up some surprisingly large ships with surprisingly small numbers of people and just transport them overland. Both the Vikings themselves and a number of the other people who used similar vessels were known occasionally if they got trapped by enemy forces in a river or there was an alternate target that they wanted to get to and they couldn't get to that river very easily from the sea, to just put themselves ashore, pick up their ship and carry their ship overland and then put it down in the new body of water and sail off to whatever it is they wanted to do then. But apart from the hull planking also being the main structural element of your ship, the other big disadvantage of clinker building was that ideally you needed very long planks to get the best clinker build, and that could be quite difficult, especially as more and more trees were felled. And indeed, it's primarily getting your hands on good quality, extremely long planking that is the main hindrance behind various efforts to rebuild modern clinker replicas of any significant size. And that's something we'll cover a bit more when I cover the reconstruction efforts to make a replica of the Sutton Hoo ship, which is something I hope to do later in the year. So this comparison drawing, you may have seen various versions thereof at various points, shows you the difference in hull profile if you're looking through a clinker-built and a carvel-built ship. Obviously, the clinker-built there having the overlapping planks, the carvel not doing so. When it comes to the carvel build, because obviously we mentioned it a little bit at Chalk, but we're mostly focusing on the clinker build technique. When it comes to carvel, the main strength is in the ship's framing and the ribs. Now, that obviously means that the planking is essentially not superfluous, because you need to keep the water out, but it is essentially sacrificial. If it gets breached, it can be repaired. You don't need particularly long planks to build a carvel-built ship, and obviously, although longer planks are better, you can very easily make do with shorter ones as long as they're not below a certain length. But the very fact you don't need extremely long planks like you do with clinker meant that you can actually paradoxically build even larger ships, because you can build them together out of lots and lots of smaller sections rather than very, very rare single long pieces. It also meant ships could last a considerably longer period of time, because if you had a relatively thin-hulled clinker-built ship and some of the planks started rotting, well, A, getting them off and out was going to be a bit of a chore, and even if you could, you'd just taken away a major structural element of the ship, and if the rest of the ship was somewhat worn, it might not survive that. Whereas with a carvel-built ship, replacing planking could be done fairly easily during various overhaul periods. So carvel-built ships could have careers spanning decades, whereas clinker-built ships usually didn't. But one of the death knells of the clinker-built ship when it came to warships, as opposed to merchant vessels, was that although the clinker-built ship internally had more volume because you didn't have frames and beams taking up a lot of space, a carvel-built ship could either have steps cut into its frames or built into its frames, or knees attached to those frames, or a combination of both, which allowed for massively stronger decking, at least towards the edges of the ship's hull, and that in turn allowed for the mounting of very heavy guns. And that, like you see with Mary Rose here, was the future of shipping. So nice short video. Hope you've enjoyed it.